All right, welcome into the Flagrant 2 podcast with Bill Ryder and Reed Forgrave, a place that we hope you enjoy listening to some NBA talk and where you decide to not just download on iTunes, but to rate and review with great love and affection and positive feelings. And Reed, I thought today was going to be kind of a joyous day. The NBA season starts week and a half, you know, early, a couple weeks early. You've got this amazing series of matchups, including in each night's game, both Boston against Cavs and later in the night last night, Rockets at Warriors, two of the biggest, maybe the biggest offseason sort of additions. There's two of those, obviously, in Boston with Kyrie going in a trade and Gordon Hayward going to free agency. And I was doing the radio show last night when the injury happened. And I got to be honest, man, Gordon Hayward comes down. Obviously, it's a savage injury. Guys on the court look like they were maybe crying. Maybe some of them were praying for him, looking away. I had trouble getting through my radio show having watched it. I can't even imagine what it was like for those Boston Celtics trying to play. And they, I mean, they played a good game afterwards. They kind of looked like sucker punch for a while, but what an awful thing for Gordon Hayward. What an awful thing for Boston. What an awful thing for the NBA.
The fact that Brad Stevens was able to get those guys to do what they did in the second half was remarkable, because I didn't even want to watch the game anymore after that. I couldn't get it out of my mind. I can only imagine if you're a player, if you're a coach, if he's your teammate, the feeling going on there. The joy of this NBA season lasted all of about 6 minutes. Look, this is, make no mistake about it, Bill, this changes the entire power dynamic of the Eastern Conference. LeBron's path to his eighth consecutive finals sure seems, if not guaranteed, certainly a lot easier. The Celtics, look, I hope this isn't a franchise-altering injury. I'm hoping that he'll be able to pull up Paul George and be back better than ever. But you never know. It certainly is a season-altering injury. I don't even know if this team is a top-four team in the East anymore, which you hate to even talk basketball after seeing such a horrific injury. Bill, when you saw that injury, did your head go to the point where my head went, which was Kevin Ware back in the NCAA tournament?
You know,
I went
Paul George. Paul George. It's the same thing, right? And it was the same thing with Paul George, in that when it happened, I was so shell shocked, Reed, and I was on the air, I was doing live radio, that it was kind of hard to make sense of what we were seeing. Like, you always sort of hope when a guy goes down that it's not as bad. And for me, it's like the reaction of the guys around him.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like the most powerful part of that moment was looking at the Cavs bench, the opponent's bench, and it looks like they're going off to throw up. And that honestly was the part that reminded me of that Kevin Ware injury. Just seeing the reaction,
the horror of it.
Yeah, it was awful, man. It was awful. I hate to admit it. I probably watched it four or five times.
I hate it. I can't do it.
I know you're that way. We've talked about this before, I respect you more than I respect me for it, because
I looked once. I watched once. And you sent me a still photo that I like couldn't stare away from.
It's the worst.
Joey did. I'm sorry. Producer Joey, you sent me a still photo. You know, Brad Stevens obviously said afterwards it's a dislocated ankle, that he fractured his tibia. Reed, we're not minimizing. Look, it sucks. Like, it's a reminder that all the other sort of garbage and drama, and not that it didn't come back, it did, but the chippiness about LeBron and Kyrie, and you hurt my feelings. No, you hurt my feelings. No, my Q rating should be bigger. Whatever, GQ, I want to be. It all dissipated in the horror of watching a guy, because that could be anybody. You go up, you go down, freak injury. But, you know, not to minimize that, but I'm with you, Reed. Their season is over. I mean, I was talking to a buddy of mine used to work in the NBA on sort of the walk home last night, just trying to like make sense of it. And we were just like, you have to have somebody or two people step up to superstar level to even have a chance to replace what he did. Cause they're not going to go out and make a trade. They already gave away that draft pick. So I know Jaylen Brown scored 23. Jason Tatum looked really good, even though his shot wasn't particular. I mean, I don't know if he looked really good. He looked like you said this last night, right? Like he belonged.
He looked like he belonged.
But not like a Gordon
Hayward.
Despite
getting the first shot of his NBA career absolutely stuffed in his face by LeBron, which, by the way, I think is something that you should tell your grandkids about. Like,
welcome to the league. No, you don't. Really? No,
maybe greatest player of all time.
Rejection. No, you lie, dude. You wait, and then you're like, hey, like, when Grandpa was a Celtic, he stuffed LeBron for the first. Really, Grandpa? I saw the YouTube highlight. Don't believe YouTube. It's a lie. I mean, yeah, the Celtics.
You went straight into some Uncle Drew there. I like it.
I like to do the old man voice. I have like three imitations that I can do. One of them is an old man. One of them is Million Dollar Duck, which is, you know, strong and important sort of pop culture reference, as our producer just stares at me.
The Million Dollar Duck!
There it is. And the other is Reed Forgrave getting knocked to the ground in a boxing match against a young Bill Ryder back in the day. I don't want to overreact. I don't want to make assessments too early about Boston season's over, even though that's what I think. And I'll say this, Reed. Last year, Avery Bradley's gone. Jay Crowder's gone. Isaiah Thomas obviously not there anymore. Brad Stevens did overachieve last year with that group of guys, I think, just as a coach.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I guess theoretically he could find a way to overachieve this year. But I'm with you. I'm very skeptical that I'm certainly skeptical that they're a top three team in the Western or the Eastern Conference now, and they're no longer a threat, I think, to the Cavs.
Yeah, Kyrie got what he wanted. He wanted his own team.
Oh no, he did not.
He has it now.
Oh no,
he did not get what he wanted. But wow. Look. Oh, now you're calling me out for being insensitive. Come on.
Yeah, man. Not insensitive. Just wants.
What Kyrie?
That's what you want. You want me off this podcast? You're one of the. Don't put yourself on Kyrie.
Look, Kyrie, we're going to see if he is the type of guy who can carry a franchise. We're going to see that this year. If this team can be high 40s win total, I think that will be because Kyrie shows he is a superstar. And if they are, you know, struggling to stay above 500, which, by the way, I don't think that is crazy to say, then I think we're going to see that Kyrie is, he's a great second best player on a great team.
By the way, I should have said this at the very start of the podcast, but I'm still feeling sort of discombobulated by that Hayward injury. We are going to have Justice Winslow on the show here in a little bit. We'll visit with him about 15 or 20 minutes. And I think, Reed, maybe it's like journalistically improper. I don't think I'm going to ask him about this. I just don't want to ask about the Gordon. I don't think I'm going to ask about the Gordon Hayward thing. I don't think we should, because as weird as this sounds, like, the guy's got a game tonight. I'm a jinx guy. Like, I'm a Cubs fan. I believe that a goat actually cost my team a championship for 100 years. So we'll have a little refuge from the Gordon Hayward talk in about 10 or 15 minutes whenever Justice is able to call in, which is very cool of him and the Heat to be doing, and his publicist, because obviously it's opening night for most of the teams, for all the teams that didn't play last night. So I want to get to some takeaways, too, just here in a second on Houston and on Golden State, Reed. But I'll end with this, and I'll say this, like, it's early, right? And we've talked a lot about Boston and how they're going to work out and what's going to happen. They almost won that game.
That's amazing. Yeah.
They did. And I part of my takeaway, and again, I don't believe in making grand sweeping assessments at the start of a season. You know, you talk to most coaches around the league, 20, 25 games is what you need as an assessment period for a team, not one game. However, I will say that I don't think the Cavs are as good as they were last year. Like, my sort of first inclination watching that game was, I don't think they're going to be as good. And this is the healthiest they're going to be because they're older. I think the Eastern Conference, for all the wrong reasons, right? Gordon Hayward is injured. I don't know that I just don't buy the Cavs. I don't buy Dwayne Wade. I don't buy Derrick Rose. I could very well be wrong. The Eastern Conference could be really interesting. It'll be the Cavs in their finals, but I think it'll be a more interesting Eastern Conference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Cavs are worse than they were a year ago, and we'll get into this later. I think the Warriors are better, which is amazing to think, even though they lost. I think they're a better
team. I'm with you on that.
Which is nuts. But look, here's the thing with the Cavs is, like, yes, it takes 20 or 25 games to assess, but with the Cavs, it's completely different. It's going to take 20 or 25 games since when Isaiah Thomas is in. And so we're not going to know who this team is until, frankly, right before the playoffs. They're going to have to adjust to who they are now, and then they're going to have to adjust to who they are 3 months from now.
I actually don't. You guys hear that? That's crazy.
No. New York sound. Sorry, I'm not used to New York. I'm a kid from Iowa. All these sirens and things are scaring me.
Oh, this big city.
This big city is not something I know how to deal with. Why did you make me Southern? I was way
Well, I was a little disappointed when earlier you said you had all these impressions. I thought for sure one of them was going to be
Minnesota. I drink sweet tea and think about the
taste. I thought you'd go for your Arkansas impression, pal.
I used to do a pretty good Bill Clinton. Bulletproof. Oh, by the way, I haven't told this story on this podcast. I've told it everywhere in the few dinner parties that I'm invited to. I don't get invited back, probably because of the story. Did once interview President Clinton when he was taking a leak at a urinal, because that's the only time I could get him. That was the only time I could get a quote.
But between us, we've pissed next to two presidents. I peed next to Obama once, but I couldn't.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was in the newsroom. He came in for an editorial board meeting, and he peed standing up, but in a stall, which is probably pretty smart because I was then unable to talk to him.
Do you think the code of that, because obviously if you'd gone like with me with President Clinton, now I was like, hey, what's up, man? Can I get a quote? Can I interview about this event? And he's like, really? And then I followed to wash my hands. And it was really, really, really embarrassing because, you know, as dudes will know, you're not really supposed to talk to other guys in the bathroom. But I was trying to get a quote. So he's like, it's this really echoey restroom. Or maybe I don't know, whatever. But it was he's pissing up a storm, and I'm just like, I can't stand here silently. He's kind of looking at me like, what are you doing? So before I say anything, I'm trying to force that. I didn't have to go. Tinkle.
Sir, do you have a problem over awkward. There?
It was real awkward. But here's my thing. You don't think – it sort of violates the rule to talk, just urinal to urinal, but it depends on the moment. Sometimes you do. You didn't feel like you could be like, yo, president – was he president yet?
No, he was candidate. He was Senator Obama.
Was he the nominee for the Democrats already?
No. It was during the Iowa caucuses when I was working.
Couldn't have been yo, Senator Obama, what's up, man? You think just the stall is a no?
If there wasn't a stall there, it would have been. It would have been on. I would have taken a peek.
Is a no talk zone?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's completely different when you are when you're a presidential candidate.
Joey Levin, by the way, our producer, is just all on it. He just stares at the screen because we do this on Skype, and I'll send him signals hey, for example, can you tell me how long we've been doing the podcast? I forgot to start a timer. And he just stares at the screen thinking about his date tonight that got canceled.
Which Joey means, has a date? Forget Gordon Hayward talk. Joey has a date?
Some weird app or Smitcher or Meter Stitch or something. What's it called, Joey?
The one that I was supposed to go on was from an app called Hinge. By the way, Hinge. I don't always see you on Skype. I see whoever's talking at the time.
I gotta tell you, how about Unhinged? Because anyone who agrees to go on a date with you, that's the app that she's on.
Well, she only agreed for a few hours, and then she pushed it back.
She delayed it. Yeah, she probably Googled you. She was like, "There's a darkness there."
These apps have pictures.
All right, transitioning from. Just the brutality of Gordon Hayward, Reed. I'm with you on I'm with you on Warriors Rockets, and I'm bummed that you went there because I really wanted to come after you and make fun of you and just get on you because everyone I don't know about everyone, but several people this morning that I know and people on social. Oh, the Rockets! Last year the Warriors lost opening night to the Spurs by 29 points. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Look, especially with Draymond gone for the fourth quarter.
Right.
I think we saw exactly how much Draymond means to this team, especially when seeing swaggy MVP.
Oh, don't.
MVP.
Dude, I'm going to swear now. What the fuck, dude? That's not even funny.
Sorry, you Lance. Lance.
Swaggy's the worst, man.
He scored 23 points last night. He was en fuego. He is a perfect fit. This is. He was
NBA Jam. He was NBA Jam.
He was NBA Jam.
With the fire. Where you're shooting for three-quarters court. It's going in. He's on fire. God. I was so good that game.
That was a great game. Especially the arcade version was absolutely amazing.
You go super hipster. I bet you've never played an arcade game. I bet you've never. That's such a you thing.
And I only played the arcade game when it was retro, a few years ago. There was an arcade bar open. Anyway, arcade bars are the best.
You're the coolest hipster and the only one in Minnesota.
Growing a big beard, bro.
Actually, Joey's a freaking hipster. Producer Joey just moved to New York from Fort Lauderdale to produce a digital TV show I don't have yet. And so that's been all great. And he shows up every day, Reed, and he's got the – it's just bro.
Just bring the hipster. You're in a radio building. Bring the hipster levels down about 98%, or take your ass to Williamsburg. What are you doing here in Soho?
I can't help it. I mean, it's just
you
my
can't
look.
Help it being a hipster.
It's, yeah, no, you can. It's why they sent me up here. It's why they sent me up here from Fort Lauderdale. It's why they sent
you up. Yeah, that's true. To get rid of you, they were also like, go somewhere else. Hey,
Bill, not to jump around too much. I do want to go back to the Cavs. What are your biggest concerns with this team? Is it all D Rose and Wade? Because that to me is those guys playing together, and they played together a lot last night. It sure doesn't seem like it works. A team that was second in the NBA in 3-point shooting, shot 22 threes and made 5 of them last night, shot as many mid-range jumpers as they shot threes. This does.
Oh, Forgrave just totally just froze up. Yeah, Minneapolis Wi-Fi. It's crushing it. While we wait for Reed to come back and drop some stats on the Cavs, I will say this to you, Joey Levin.
Yeah.
Going back to Warriors Rockets, I know I'm also not going to make like a crushing assessment on Warriors Rockets after a single game, but you made a point, an observation that I didn't even put together. And you obviously worked in the league for a long time. You worked in basketball for 10 years, the NBA for most of that in Charlotte. You thought Steve Kerr was messing with the league with like his rotations and the guys that he put in.
I mean, it just, he's probably not trolling the league the way I think he is, but
no, go with it. Now you're gonna back
up. No. But it is, I think he is a little bit. I think he's just saying he said in an interview a few days ago, I can play every player on my team. I'm comfortable with it. And he showed it last. I mean, Omri Caspi was playing last night. I didn't even know I forgot Omri Caspi was still in the league. He was playing in the first quarter. He was just trying to get everybody involved, and it seemed like he doesn't care at this point in the season. He knows where he's going to be at the end of the year.
Yeah, I agree. And as Reed said, who is back with us now after that top 5 Minneapolis City in America with Wi-Fi. I think that not having Andre Iguodala is something. I think not having Draymond for a big chunk of the game is something. I think that the fact that not only did you just win an NBA championship again, but you know you're probably going to win this one. It's almost like it's one thing to have a post-championship hangover. It's another one to have a post-championship hangover just before the certain raucous party, part two. Like, now there's a lack of effort, but there was kind of – it just doesn't matter. Like, what do we talk about all the time, Reed? How frustrating it is and how no one wants to be like, it's already done. It's already over.
Yeah, hate it.
It's over, probably. I mean, you never know.
Like, I do think the Gordon Hayward injury is a reminder to all of us that there are no guarantees in this league. That's anything can happen, whether it's an injury or a personality conflict. I don't think this team is short of an injury. I can't think of too many instances where this team does not win at all. But
let's play a game.
You got to play the games.
Let's play a game here. Let's say that either, and I, knock on wood, I don't want to happen. We just got done talking about Gordon Hayward. I'm not rooting for this, obviously. I'm not trying to put it into the universe. But just for the sake of this conversation, let's say Steph Curry goes down for the year or Kevin Durant goes down for the year. I think that team still wins 65 to 70 games.
Yeah.
And I think that team still probably wins the damn NBA. They're not going to win every game but one on their march to the confetti falling for them at Oracle. But
by the way, they might. it is possible.
2 years ago, yeah. Can I say something super crazy? Can I say something like super? People are going to roll their eyes, but I'm just going to say it.
Uh-oh.
Durant's the better player when he's on this team than Curry. But if I had to choose one guy to go down, like I knew the other guy would be healthy, I think I'm keeping Steph Curry, by the way.
Yep. I think Steph Curry is more important to this team, even though obviously Durant is, maybe not even obviously, but he's probably the better player.
Durant's best player.
Second best player on earth, right? But yeah, I mean, Steph, what he does, no one else does.
And I think he creates like this sort of Warriors way. I know it's alchemy, and I know that the front office is a big part of it. Now Jerry West is gone. I know Steve Kerr is a big part of it. I know that ownership group and their sort of Silicon Valley, we're smarter than everyone, and we're going to tell you in the New York Times, and it turns out we are smarter than everyone. Arrogance, good for them, is part of it. I think Steph's part of it. I do. One thing that I don't want to get too carried away on one single game. I just got a, by the way, this is apropos nothing. I just got a note from someone that's a emoji and then a kissy emoji. Whoever that person is,
what a terrible
person, kind of person that would probably talk to President Obama through a stall, which I would never ever recommend.
Kiss
What is it? What is it called?
Kiss. I don't know.
Joey's like writing the timestamps down. Like,
poor Joey.
All right, before we get to Justice Winslow, Joey's telling me he's calling in here in a moment. Chris Paul Reed did not look comfortable off the ball, did not look comfortable in that offense, did not shoot particularly well. I know he had a bunch of assists. He does that. While Houston still looked like Houston and Harden still looked like Harden, Chris Paul did nothing like Chris Paul. And I'm just been around the guy. I'm just telling you. I've been highly critical of the guy in my commentary and my reporting. That's not going to sit. He's a competitor. It's not going to sit well if you can't figure out how to play. And you got to give it time. But, like, he's got to give it time. I still think there's a lot of opportunity for disruption, even if it's working. I really, really do.
Yeah. I mean, you were worried about this going into the season. I still, I don't know. One game in, they'll figure it out.
It's a game. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, Chris Paul's personality, I think, could how he reacts to any struggles is going to be really, really interesting.
And Mike D'Antoni, and I'm not disparaging, I like Mike. I've told you this when I bumped him at the movie once, and it was super awkward. My wife and I bumped into D'Antoni and his wife because we were neighbors in L.A., and I was like, hey, what movie did you see? And he just like,
Betrayal. Betrayal.
Now, I will say, I don't know what movie he saw. I don't know what movie he saw, but Lori was there, my wife, and it was like real weird. She's like, that was weird. And we came in, and there were all these people there for 50 Shades of Grey. Like, I'm not saying that's what he went to. I'm just saying. But like, my wife's like, you think he saw 50? I'm like, I don't, with his wife, I don't think so. I think he's just awkward.
Don't tell a reporter. Tell him, if anything, like, you just went and saw, like, The Incredibles 2 or something.
So, right. Saw the new Pixar film. There isn't a new Pixar film.
Yes, shut up. Is.
I have to go. Right, we were going to something. It wasn't 50 Shades of Grey. What, by the way, have you read, Reed, you like to style yourself an intellectual. How many times have you read 50 Shades of Grey and 50 Shades Darker and Darker Than the Shades or whatever it's called? Three times
each? I have not read. Oh,
I have not read. All right. It's personal. I'm not bringing it up. I'm not judging you.
That's okay. It's okay. I've read some trashy books, but I feel like
as much as I might enjoy reading a book about sadomasochism, I couldn't be in an airport with a book. I felt so.
I remember when I was reading back before it was cool. I was reading To Kill a what are those Mockingjay books? Hunger Game books, and they have these like super bright, shiny covers, and you know. Married, happily married, but just saying, I was in an airport, a very beautiful woman was across from me, and like, I literally like pulled my book out, but like hid it behind like a New Yorker, like, I am so sophisticated, what's going on with Katniss? And I went into I was flying back to Miami, and do you know who was reading that book in that locker room? Chris Bosh. And do you know who kind of made fun of him for it? LeBron James. And do you know who like 2 years later like made a point of like reading when it got cool? LeBron James.
I'm pretty sure I made fun of you for reading Hunger Games. And
Hunger
then,
James is really good, too.
James.
My name it's is early, James, early. And I need a
piece. Early.
Hunger James. The Soho story.
I'm pretty sure I made fun of you for reading it, and then my wife was like, this book is so good. And I was like, whatever. And then I read it, and I couldn't put it down two
a
days later.
A friend of mine who's a librarian recommended it. Okay, getting back to Chris Paul. I know we're bouncing around, and then Justice Winslow is about to call in. I'm totally with you. I do not think that you can make sweeping assessments at this stage of things, but I am a little bit – I remain concerned. And did you notice Chris Paul, the whole narrative, he's the greatest leader ever, which isn't true, doesn't get along with guys, off-putting, can't get along with coaches, strong willpower. He and DeAndre couldn't stand each other. All stuff that I reported a few years ago, the narrative used to be that's a lie. Like when I broke those stories in L.A., the Clippers used their radio station to basically call me. I used to drive in to my own radio show on a different network and listen to them by name, disparage my reputation. And you know, the behind the scenes read that the PR guys who were there, both of whom are gone, good riddance, you weren't very good at your job. I would call up and be like, you're calling me a liar. And they'd be like, you are a liar. And then when DeAndre left for Dallas for 30 seconds, they refused to take my phone calls, which I think showed it was a microcosm for a culture of the Clippers of not taking accountability. And the irony to me is that Chris Paul did the exact same thing. He left. He gave an interview. He talked about how the culture there was whack. He talked about how it didn't work. It's like, you are the culture. And he admitted in that interview that sometimes he's not the easiest guy to get along with, which I thought was interesting because it's so out there, Reed. My point is, it's a real thing. And I do kind of worry that he's going to be able to make it work in the long run. All right. So we do have to get to Justice Winslow. Very excited about this interview. But before that, public service announcement. Reed and I have discovered separately through this podcast, MeUndies. It is literally the best underwear you will ever own. I'm wearing a pair, not to be too personal right now, but it's really, really comfortable. If you're working a lot, if you're on the move, if like me, you're in a big, big city, if you're like Reed, you're in the hamlet that is Minneapolis, it's amazing. Like, it's just incredibly, incredibly comfortable. There's an exclusive offer right now. You can get 20% off your first pair and you get free shipping. I promise you, it's a no-brainer. Give it a try. And to get 20% off MeUndies and the free shipping and a 100% satisfaction guarantee for the softest and best and most remarkable underwear you will ever own, it really is incredible. Go to MeUndies.com/NBA. That's MeUndies.com/NBA. Again, MeUndies.com/NBA. It's a limited time offer, so what are you waiting for? I can see Reed on the Skype, even though he's got some, ordering some right now. It's a smart move. I'm going to do it after the podcast. Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It changed my life. It's time to let MeUndies change yours. Again, MeUndies.com/NBA, and the code is I, that's E-Y-E as an I on sports. I promise, good stuff.
All right, as promomised here on the Flagrant 2 podcast, Justice Winslow joins us right now on behalf of Metrics, whose lineup of sports nutrition protein bars help athletes who are hungry for more to take their training to the next level. And Justice, I would imagine after an off season, after a preseason, you are hungry for some regular season basketball. It is here. How you feeling, and how do you feel about your Miami Heat team going into this season?
I'm extremely excited. I'm relaxed. I'm poised, but I'm extremely excited. Just in the simplest sense, to be back out there with my teammates, just playing this beautiful game I love in front of some great fans. So I'm just excited just to be back out there on the court.
Justice, one thing I love about your game, man, I love your versatility, but I can't quite figure out, like, what is your best position on the court? So you tell me, like, where do you feel most comfortable on the court? Is it playing small ball four? Is it a three? Backup point? Where do you feel most comfortable?
I feel most comfortable just on the court. You know, I try to stay off the bench as much as possible, out of the training room, stay healthy. But, man, I can do a lot of things out there. So, especially in a system like Miami that almost shies away from the positions, I'm just at myself, at ease with myself in my game. If I'm just out there on the court, affecting the game, making plays, and so just kind of wherever they plug me in, I just want to be able to make a difference out there on the court. So whether it is small ball four or just playing the wing, the three, or backup point guard, really just me out there on the floor. Gives me a chance to showcase my ability. So as long as coach is playing me, I'm happy.
Justice, speaking of coach, I had the pleasure to cover that Heat team. Man, it's been 4 or 5 years. LeBron's first year there, the year of the big three. I'm a huge Eric Spoelstra fan, and he got recognition last year, but I think he's one of the most underappreciated head coaches in the NBA nationally. Last year, you guys had obviously a really brutal start. You start 11-30. You finish the season, 30-11. What was the difference? Like, what led to that change, and what did you specifically as a player do, feel, think differently to help spark it?
Guys started getting healthy, and guys were able to kind of put in some time in practice and even more time in the game to build that chemistry. So I think guys kind of, you know, got healthy kind of at the right time. But we just started clicking. We just started playing selfless basketball. Guys started sacrificing, you know, time points and, you know, minutes, you know, for the greater good of the team, and everyone, you know, really bought in. And so you could just tell in the locker room, guys never, you know, we're too down. We were 11-30 and never too high when, you know, we started putting that win streak together. So for us, it was about buying into the team's principles and our standards. And ultimately, we got the ship going in the right direction, and that's how we want to start off this season.
Justice, you know, for a team that plays as good a defense as you guys do, what is it, like, behind the scenes that leads to that kind of defense? Is it a philosophy that they put into place? Is it about buying in? Is it a process? We talk a lot in the NBA about offense, about the revolution in Golden State, about the advent of three-pointers and how we understand how they matter in terms of scoring and championships and winning today. The days of Barkley saying you can't win three-point shooters is over. But from a defensive perspective, What are the keys to have the kind of defense the Heat have had that have defined that organization and defined you guys and your success last year?
I think it's just relentless attention to detail. We never start practice off with offense. It's always defense, and that kind of just is continually hammered home, throughout a practice or throughout a film session. We make it a priority, and we also have a lot of guys that have embraced defense. Defense is kind of how, we became noticed. A guy like myself, a guy like Jay Rich, a guy like Tyler Johnson, even James Johnson, Hassan, we're guys that, that's how we got our recognition was through that defensive side of the court. So it's part of the court that we really embraced. And we understand that, we're gonna score enough points, but we got to stop other teams from scoring. And so, we spent a lot of time and attention to detail on that side of the court.
Justice, you had an 8-month rehab from the shoulder surgery. I'm imagining there were some pretty depressing days in there. How do you, during those days, how are you able to keep your mood up? And more importantly, how are you not able to just sit on your couch and eat Cheetos? I read that you actually lost 10 pounds during the offseason, which amazes me after being off for surgery.
It was extremely tough for me just being away from the game and having to deal with my first real, real injury. But, there were times when I was alone and, in more of a negative state. But the good thing I would say is, you become a prisoner, or like I like to say, a hero of your thoughts. And so just having that open dialogue with myself and being vulnerable, being in an unfamiliar place, it taught me a lot about myself. And I picked up different, traits, whether it's, self-discipline or the attention to every detail, or if it's just, the ability to have a level head and a clear head and, not focus too much on the future, but remain in the present. Just all those things. But like you said, being down in weight, and that was just such a great thing about, the availability of this partnership with Metrics is, they're exactly what I was looking for, a performance company that really tries to help athletes take their game to the next level. And so for me, that was something I knew I wanted to accomplish this offseason. So just having all their products, available, having a big 100, bar available to me after every workout, having the protein powder, all that, it really helped me get down in weight and just diet, really, just the nutrition aspect, changing that, as much as I love, Sour Patches and Skittles and Starburst and Lucky Charms and Fruity Pebbles, I had to kind of get away from it and, start taking that part of my professional career more seriously, and it really paid off with how my body has turned out, after the offseason.
Well, Justice, you always struck me, even back from the Duke days, a very thoughtful, interesting, different thinker. I know you spent a lot of time on Netflix, certainly when you were in rehab from this shoulder surgery. Give me like the most thoughtful film that you watched during that recovery time.
I don't know if it was a thoughtful film, but there's definitely a film or two that I try to revisit. Whiplash is a great kind of film about a young drummer, and he has a super strict, super hard music instructor. So that was a good film. But on a more serious, kind of emotional note, I had a friend that she directed and helped produce a film about depression and suicide, because she's had some of her friends take their lives. And so that was something that we kind of bonded over as she was going through that, just always being a helping ear to, if she was going through something with the film or something outside of the film. It's a little bit more serious than, deeper kind of film, but, that's something that, I've watched and one of her things that I've supported. And so the film is called, or the documentary is called Not Alone. Her name is Jacqueline Mineta, but that's something that really touched me. Her film, and just reaching out to other people, because there were dark days, and I was never really truly depressed, but there were nights when super emotional, super down, a lot of doubt creeping into my head, and being able to watch her film and kind of reflect on it really helped me out a lot in the offseason.
You know, Justice, since we're talking about some of the headier, more nuanced stuff, Reed and I on the podcast and on the radio show have talked a lot about the National Anthem protests and how what began and should still be an attempt to raise awareness about unarmed black men being killed in this country by police officers at times has become, unfortunately, something else. I'm curious if you think the politics of the anthem, the politics of that kind of violence against unarmed black men, will make its way into the NBA this season the way that it has the National Football League?
No, I'm not sure. At this protest, I've been manipulated in a way by, you know, the media and the White House in a way that has negatively reflected a lot of the people protesting. And the protests aren't to say that, you know, police don't like black men, but these things are going on, and there needs to be change. And the change isn't going to come from, you know, the police department or the judicial branch. The change is going to come from the people, from everyday Americans, everyday civilians, from construction workers, firefighters, school teachers, just the everyday people. That's where the change is going to come. So I've tried to steer away from those type of protests just because in the recent months they've done more to divide our country than, you know, bring this awareness or bring us together. And so I think it's time for, you know, the next step, and whatever this process is, I think it's time for the next step for change. I mean, the National Anthem protests served a purpose, but now I think they're almost, you know, taking away from the awareness and drawing people further apart. So I've been thinking about it and talking to, you know, our team, my friends away from the team, and you know, mentors or whatever, to see, you know, what is that next step as people that we can take in order to keep making change, because this isn't a problem that's going to go away overnight. You know, this is going to take years, but hopefully, you know, by the time I have kids, they can live in a much more diverse and accepting world.
Justice, I know you spent a lot of time this summer working on your outside shot. I think people forget that Kawhi Leonard wasn't much of an outside shooter when he came into this league. Tell me what specifically about your shot that you're working on. And I'm really curious if you look at Kawhi's success as a blueprint for your own.
Just kind of the flow of my shot. You know, I kind of had a little hitch, or, you know, it wasn't the most fluid shot. So just working on different mechanics, different little drills and nuances to help smooth my shot out. But, you know, ultimately, you know, you can change mechanics, but there's guys all around the league that shoot, you know, ever which way, funky way, but it's just about the reps. You know, you put the reps in, you put the time in, and the results will follow. So obviously I wanted to find, you know, what's the most efficient way to shoot, and, you know, I didn't want to have some jacked up jumper. And so the mechanical things we tried to figure out, but just, you got to put it in the reps. You got to put in the reps to where, you know, the jumper just becomes muscle memory and you're confident that every shot is going in. And so that was the approach I had, you know, kind of tweak some of the mechanical things, but ultimately just put enough reps in to where it becomes automatic. It becomes just, you know, muscle memory, and you have confidence that every shot is going in.
Justice Winslow is joining us here on the Flagrant 2 on behalf of Metrics, whose lineup of sports nutrition protein bars help athletes who are hungry for more take their training to the next level. Justice, know you got to roll. One last question, and very much appreciate you, and we're wishing you lots of success individually and to your team this season. When I was around Coach Spolster, around Spo all the time, don't let go of the rope was the nonstop mantra. What is the Spo mantra right now? And do you want to suggest an alternative to him? You know, if he's like looking for something different this season.
You guys may not know, but you know, we had some different guys come in and talk to us during training camp, and one of the things was push the rock. I don't know if you guys ever heard that story.
No, no.
Basically, I forgot. He's like a Greek goddess. I think his name is Pythias or something like that. And it's basically, he did something wrong, and so the gods gave him the ruling that he had to push his rock for eternity. And so you start worrying more about the process and the progress of pushing this rock rather than, you know, the end result. And I think that was a big lesson learned from Coach Bo and from the speakers we had, is kind of fall in love with the process. You know, don't worry. Don't fall in love with the end result. Don't fall in love with being an NBA champion. Fall in love with the work you have to put in. Fall in love with the games you have to lose. Fall in love with the heartbreaking games that come down to the wire that you lose. You know, fall in love to waking up early, staying late. You know, fall in love with pushing the rock. You know, that was a big thing for us and our team.
That's awesome. That's the most bolster thing I've ever heard. I love it. Justice, thanks, man.
Justice, the Sisyphus of the Miami Heat, dude. We rooting for you this year, man. Good luck.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Have a good one. Have a good season, Justice. Thanks, brother. Thanks, man.
Good stuff from Justice Winslow, the Sisyphus of the NBA. Thoughtful guy. It's a guy I'm rooting for this year, and I think let's hope that certainly that his year this year is better than that injury-riddled year from last year.
I liked him. You know him. I mean, you know him from the college days. Like, I haven't spent a lot of time around him. Really cool dude. Impressive dude.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those guys who really goes all in on the city where he's in. He did that in Durham when he was in college. He's doing that in Miami. He's really into the art scene. We didn't get to go into that, but yeah, thoughtful guy. And look, a lot of people have been critical of his game. I think it all just boils down to, can he shoot outside shots? But I think he has. So look, that's a glaring thing that he needs to work on. But there's so many other aspects to his game that he can add to this team. So big year for him. Really important year.
Yeah, I really do. I really like Eric Spoelstra. I think he's a really, really good coach. And I think it's worth pointing out, Reed Forgrave, that you tend to play favorites. You're all over Minneapolis. And I can't remember, Justice Winslow, in the fantasy league you didn't invite me to play in, did you draft Justice Winslow?
You mean 20 point a game, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, Justice Winslow?
Yeah, that guy.
Of course I did.
How did I not get an invite?
Of course I did.
How did I not get an invite to this league?
You did get invited. You said, I'm too busy. Too busy.
Is that how I said it?
I'm really angry. You did it in a southern accent. Raid. I'm
sorry. How do you do angry? I want to hear you do angry southern accent.
I can't.
I'm real angry.
I only do that after like 6 months.
Everything sounds like really dignified, right? I gotta take a sorry, Joey. Right? Like, you know, I just made a toot toot. It sounds super like dignified, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, extremely.
I went dignified. I went toot toot. Speaking of,
that's a drop, Joey. I think the toot toot is a drop.
Speaking of dignified, Reed Forgrave. Man of mystery, man of many hats, Renaissance man. You had a story in the New York Times Magazine. Last weekend was excellent. You obviously are a big shot here at CBSSports.com. You stalk future presidents in bathrooms in Des Moines. And you also write for GQ Magazine. And GQ Magazine had – see, that's for the transition. I was
seamless. And thank you for all that.
Had a really good, interesting – LeBron James story. What was your read on one of your many employers' take on LeBron? And obviously, he was on the cover as the most influential athlete out there.
Other than the fact that it knocked my next GQ story from the November issue to the January issue, whatever.
LeBron. Did it really?
It did. Yeah, there's that story. Can't have two basketball stories in the same issue.
Are we allowed to say which one, or is it like?
Yeah, it's a long form profile of John Calipari, the Kentucky head coach, and. Groomer of many NBA stars.
Coach.
The Kentucky head coach.
I thought you meant John Calipari, the character actor from The Americans.
Oh, that's a good point. He played the garbage man, right?
But you've seen it. He plays the garbage man.
Oh, it's an excellent bit role. But yeah, so I thought this article was fascinating because it tackles who LeBron is beyond basketball. To me, the point of this story was you can measure athletes in very obvious ways. Number of championships, MVPs. When you want to say the greatest of all time, you put LeBron next to Jordan and you can say, okay, clearly Jordan is better because he won more titles. He won more MVPs.
I don't know if it's that clear. I don't know if it's that clear. Not to fall into the
draft. Right now, it probably is. I'm not sure if it will be in 5 years. But what this story goes into is the bigger picture. It's what does LeBron mean culturally? And it kind of paints him as
And you've written about this a lot, Bill, including for our site on opening night just yesterday, talking about kind of LeBron's responsibilities, social responsibilities. He does mean more than basketball. Say what you will about Michael Jordan, but he famously said Republicans buy shoes too, and was someone who didn't go out there and make these statements. Agree with LeBron or disagree with LeBron and his political stances. I think you got to have a large amount of respect for what he has done as far as getting out of his comfort zone and really, frankly, shaping what will be a fascinating second phase to his career as a media mogul, as a political figure, as who knows, the guy can do a million things. What was your take on this story?
Well, I don't want to say in fairness to LeBron James, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, to Michael Jordan. He claims he didn't say that. Like, that's supposed, like, that's not a certainty that was spoken.
Gotcha.
But I'm with you. I think it was, and there's some disagreement on whether or not it was said. But the reality is, like, in the more important reality, right? It was practiced.
Sure.
Like, it was practiced. I wrote a column, and a lot of people got really angry. And some of them, it's interesting. Like, I talk about this a lot on the radio show. I think LeBron should have knelt. I think what makes this country great is that like-minded people can disagree about the most difficult issues. Like-minded on the things that matter, even if there are certain things that divide us. And a lot of people disagreed, wrote me really long, very polite, very intense screeds, and I enjoyed the exchange. Not only on Twitter, well, you and I are both on there, but I have one of those like designated Facebook pages, yeah. Bill Rider Sports, and I don't go there very often, but people like wrote some really long, sort of thoughtful responses, and I really enjoyed that engagement. Then some people were just jerks. I didn't swear because I don't want to have to bleep them all out. But all of that aside, I think LeBron is a power for what he views as good in the world, right? And I think his views on social justice and mine probably, you know, are and yours, Reed, are somewhat aligned. Not that it matters, but so it's easier for us to praise it. But even if it weren't, I think it's like Trayvon Martin, I think is really interesting, right? And like he wore shoes honoring Trayvon Martin before violence against unarmed black men became, as it should be, a national conversation, right? I think he's a remarkable steward for combining his platform and the politics of the moment and the zeitgeist and sort of where we're at. And for that reason, I respect him a ton. And obviously, part of the reason that he can do that is he's a remarkable, remarkable athlete. I mean, he is an amazing, amazing athlete. And, you know, I mean, I credit him with having the – I don't know if courage is the word, but the willingness to – engage in conversation that's going to make him unpopular, especially knowing, not that I know him, but having covered him enough to know LeBron cares what people think. He really, yeah, I don't absolutely care what he says. He absolutely does. And so to engage in behavior that is by nature going to alienate at least a third of America, I think is its own kind of courage is probably a little strong, but its own kind of character. And I respect the hell out of him for it. Even though I don't agree with everything that most of what he does, but it's not about agreeing with what he espouses. Even though I think you and I mostly do, I certainly mostly do, it's about respecting his willingness to do it.
I hate the phrase stick to sports. I love sports because of the competition and because of the intensity, but I respect athletes so much who take their microphone and use it for something bigger. And look, if it's someone that I disagree with, you know, more power to him. I think there needs to be, frankly, more of this, not less of this. So, I'd say more power to LeBron, man.
Shifting to basketball, but also the thing that allows LeBron to be, you know, one of the great ambassadors from sports to other issues, or one of the more effective ones, I should say. I don't think he's going to win an NBA championship this year. I don't think he's going to win an NBA championship next year. As we've discussed ad nauseum, and Will, I think the Warriors are just that good and that dominant. I don't buy Cleveland as a better team this season. However, I was talking to somebody about this. Like, well, he's made what, seven? LeBron's been in seven consecutive finals?
Yeah, seven in a row.
Does he pass Jordan if he gets to 10 or 12 or 14? And I ask you this, I ask you that to ask you this. Sam Amick, who's our colleague at USA Today, is a great NBA reporter. I had him on the radio show yesterday, and we were talking about LeBron and where he's going to go and how I think he's going to leave. And he kind of was like, yeah, maybe LA. And I kind of challenged him politely, like, you really think he's going to stay in Cleveland? And he's like, no. And I'm not saying this is based on reporting, but just a combination of a hunch and reporting. Sam's like, keep an eye on Philly, just as a possible LeBron destination. a year from now and made a great point. Like Rich Paul, LeBron's agent, LeBron's friend, runs the agency. LeBron will run LeBron the Entrepreneur when LeBron retires, also represents Ben Simmons. And everyone made a big deal when LeBron came to the Lonzo Ball game in Vegas. And Sam's point, a good one, was they were playing the Sixers and LeBron sat with Simmons and got a photo with him and sat with a bunch of Philly people. So, and it made me just think, like, if he went to, because you and I have discussed this, I have a theory. I think LeBron is tactical enough to know he can carry any team to an NBA Finals in the East for the next 1 to 3, 4 years. He's going to want a team that he can do that where it's easier rather than harder, that can also transition to sort of they carry the weight equally for 3 or 4 years afterwards, and even they carry him, right? When he's the sixth man coming off the bench and he's 40 years old. Philly's a really interesting concept. It's the fourth biggest market in America. It's not that far from New York City. It's the fourth biggest TV market. And I didn't know that. I had to look it up yet. I thought it was Houston. Houston is five. Houston is eight, right? And Houston's like a major metropolis. To put that in perspective, Boston is like nine. So what about like LeBron is, whether it's Philly or LA, if LeBron makes, let's say he makes the finals this year with Cleveland, that's eight, and goes to a place where he makes four more, which I think he could certainly do in a place like Philly, start to talk about 12 consecutive NBA Finals appearances. Does it matter if he's at 12 of them and his record is 3-9 as it relates to Jordan? Does it? I'm curious.
I think it matters to people of our generation who are
you do
because we grew up watching Jordan and we've only known Michael Jordan as the greatest athlete of all time. To our children. I think they will pick LeBron. I think it's a generational thing because he's. I mean, we said this before, but he's.
Who would you pick? If he makes 13. Let's go absurd. Let's go 12. He makes 12 consecutive NBA Finals. He's got three right now, right? And he wins four of them.
Oh God!
And he brought one to Cleveland, which is like.
The storyline there is remarkable. I have no idea. I mean, look,
it's in the realm of possibility.
I give Jordan points for the fact that he's, you know, stayed with the same franchise until he was.
No, he didn't. You know,
old until he was old and decrepit.
Michael. All right, but like, what's that? Like, what is that sort of quality? He didn't. You know?
I don't know. I think it adds the nostalgia factor. The fact that LeBron had to go to the super team to get his first two titles. I might pick LeBron. It's going to take a recalibration of thinking because I'm just so used to
And I'm with him.
The idea of Michael Jordan.
But isn't it
not
the
just
realm...
the greatest basketball player of all time, but the greatest athlete of all time.
And that's why I think like we hold on to numbers, right? Like I do too. Human beings and numbers that are nice and even. Like guy hits 399, it's a missed opportunity. Guy gets one more hit or like Ted Williams, a couple more hits in a doubleheader last game of the season. Last time someone did that and he hit 406. But let's just say he hits 400. Oh, it's history. Yeah. One less hit. Oh, you missed history. So if LeBron gets to 10, 500 home runs, you're back before steroids. You're in the Hall of Fame, 498 home runs. What a shame.
Whatever.
Right? 300 wins. You are amazing, Greg Maddux. 292. Oh, that's 297. My point is, let's say he gets to a nice rounded number of like 10 consecutive NBA Finals. I don't know, man. Like it's
getting to the finals is an incredible achievement, but it's not a memorable achievement. I mean, look, when you think of the best football NFL franchises of the 1990s, you think of the Dallas Cowboys, you think of the San Francisco 49ers, you think of the Packers. You don't think of the Buffalo Bills.
What
if
the Bills
made four Super Bowls in a row?
Yeah, what if they made seven, though? Because here's my – and this gets back to this old argument, like, and all these LeBron lovers put it out there, and it has some value. I'm not making it in its entirety. LeBron got to – you can make the argument LeBron got to finals before he could win them, and Jordan wasn't able to do it, right?
That's like, great. It's a great argument.
Losing to the Pistons has more value than, like, beating the Pistons and then losing to the – so it's an interesting
– frankly, Jordan had better teams surrounding him all of those finals years than just about any of LeBron's finals years.
I think LeBron knows he can't win. LeBron, we all know he can't be perfect in the NBA Finals. He has to it has to be a new paradigm, and he has to create that narrative. And that's why I think Sam Amick's point about Philly, just speculation, educated guessing, is really interesting. And I wrote a column, and you know this, Reed, and we were at Fox Sports Live together, I used to go on the air all the time, be like, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think LeBron can go to Cleveland. And I got mocked on the air, off the air, in that building when he returned. And you and I used to discuss it. how I was going to shove it in the face of Gary Payton and Donovan McNabb and my good friend Andy Roddick if it happened, and how
and
I thought
you did.
Like, I did.
Yeah, you did.
The humility went away. My natural humility for a moment was eclipsed by the moment. But how I thought that young – I thought LeBron would look at – and by the way, like all these Miami Heat sycophantic writers would write, the Heat are so much better equipped for the next 5 years, because people get groupthink, especially in the NBA. Writers, players, front office people. LeBron saw the landscape for what it was. I think he made a mistake with Wiggins, but he understood the assets Cleveland had. Kyrie, the ability to go out, I think Love's underwhelming, but LeBron saw Cleveland for what it was, a team that he could put around him, he could win. I think Philly could be that team. I think it's really interesting, and the guy that makes the most sense in terms of LeBron watching and studying, and is he going to be worthy of time and attention to bring LeBron to a place like Philly, if there's an upset, I don't think it's Ben Simmons, it's Joel Embiid, which is, I understand, we're going to play this sound here, I understand why Embiid is angry. But Philly's got to be smart on protecting Embiid, not just because it protects Embiid and a possible top five player for 5, 6, 7, 10 years if he's healthy. A player of that talent can attract, in theory, a guy like LeBron James. So here's Joel Embiid, understandably angry, but I think it's misplaced about his minutes restrictions this year.
That's wish I was playing more minutes. I think I'm ready. Think I'm ready for more than, I don't know, whatever number they have. But I don't know. I wish I was playing more, but we're going to see how that goes.
That was Bill Ryder. That was Bill Ryder talking for a second.
You beat me to my own joke.
Step on your line.
That was good. I want to move on to sort of what we're looking forward to, but like, do you have any sort of overarching take?
I think it is. Why should the Sixers, a team that I don't think can get any better than seventh or eighth playoff seed, why should you risk it this year? Get what you can get out of him. Be overly protective with him because he is the process, man. Like Simmons, I think can be a really good player. Fultz does not look great now, but I think he will within the next year or two. Embiid is the truth, and why mortgage that? Why risk that for a year that frankly doesn't really matter?
I agree with everything you said other than seventh or eighth. I think they can be the fourth or fifth best team in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, that's crazy!
If Embiid plays 65 or more games.
They're so young.
I really do.
I love it. Wish it into existence, my friend.
I really, really do, Mr. Forgrave. All right, man, there's so much to get into here. Joey, I was asking, what are you guys looking forward to the next couple nights? Joey was going to be looking forward to his date that got canceled. But
what, Joey?
From an NBA, and Reed, you and I are just married guys, right? We live vicariously through guys like Joey. It's kind of sad, really, like going on the hinge machine, or the unhinged app or whatever it is.
He's getting dates on apps that we didn't even know existed.
Man. I mean, I don't even know how the world works. He like was showing me the photos last night, and the photos were moving like some Harry Potter scene. I'm like, wait, those are videos. What's happening? This is very strange. And your young lady apparently likes clubs. And you, and 24 hours later, she likes clubs. So, what are you looking forward to tonight, tomorrow night?
Lonzo, man, give me Lonzo.
I knew you were gonna say Lonzo.
So I thought you would have thought I was gonna say my Timberwolves playing the Spurs. But yeah, man, look, Lonzo, there will be some rough patches this season for that team and for him individually, especially on defense. He was not a great defender in college. But look, I think he is going to be a league pass type of guy. I think this is a league pass type of team, and I think he's going to be a superstar in the NBA. I really do. So I will be tuning in for that for sure. And
may I ask you a Lonzo question?
No, I'm yeah. Yeah.
Over. No, you can't. Over under Lonzo shooting from the field tonight, 37%. What are you taking?
Taking the over.
I will take the under.
What are we betting?
The loser on the next podcast has to sing 15 seconds of Against the Wind by Bob Seger.
Oh, no, I hate Bob
Seger. You have to insert wind for the other guy's name.
Why'd you have to go Bob Seger?
You have to insert the word wind for the other guy's name. Against the Bill. I found myself running Against the Bill.
It's, I kind of want to take this bet back, but I think I'm just going to have to root really hard for Lonzo.
37%. You have the over. I have the under. If he shoots 100 shots and makes 37 of them, we tie. It's a push. And then Joey can sing.
I'm aiming for.
Joseph, what are you looking for tonight now that you're all alone in the city?
Timberwolves. I want to see their first game. I want to see how this team actually works out because I think they're going to be great.
I honestly really thought I was going to be like, Timberwolves, and just stop.
Say more.
A man of many words, and by many I mean two. If you spell timber and wolves as two words like you should. I have many leather bound. Oh, I have to stop. It's too many words. I am. Does this make me a bad person? I'm really looking forward to Knicks Thunder because I want to see the Thunder play. I also could see just the possibility of the Knicks winning, even though they probably won't. And I'm just like, just the. I could also like see the Thunder very easily winning and Melo going. I'll make a bold prediction: 8 for 32.
I mean, that doesn't make you a bad person. There are so many other things
that do,
but that's not the one that I'd pick. Hey, man, I think both those teams are fascinating. I think the Knicks going to be a dumpster fire this year. Dumpster fire.
Like a tutu fire?
It's early. I'm sleepy. My wife's on a work trip. I got to take care of the kids in the morning. Dumpster fire, bro. Dumpster fire.
I'm wearing NBA pants, and there's a mop over on the wall. Do you know what that doesn't come with what you just said? Nobody cares. All right, it's the Flagrant 2 podcast. Listen to us on iTunes, on SoundCloud, on Stitcher, on TuneIn. If you're the young lady who blew off Joey, please come back to him. He is nicer than he seems on this podcast, and he misses you. My name is Bill Ryder. I'm a jerk. That's Reed Forgrave. He's a diva. Producer Joey works in the NBA. He just works hard. Obviously gets you nowhere in life. Thank you for listening to The Flagrant 2. Happy NBA season. Send a good thoughts to Gordon Hayward. We'll be back with you guys in a couple days.